Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And good morning, Rochester. Yes, it is Friday the 13th, and it falls on a Saturday in the year 2017. And you are listening to Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And Nick is taking a little personal time off to be with his family. Kind of oddly, as we always say, you hear us talk during the pledge times. We're usually here just about every Saturday. Well, the show is. But once in a while, Steve, Nick, and I like to spend a little time with what we call our families so they don't forget who we are, because we've been doing this now for 27 years completing. So, because we enjoy, and you folks show your support. And again, this is just iterating back to all those folks when we asked during the pledge drive to, step up to the plate and show your support. Well, we're still here, and we're still taking your questions, and we encourage you folks to call 585-966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415, and we're here for the next 2 hours to take your computer questions and fill you in on some of the other stuff. But the other key thing, we definitely have to remind you folks, because I know you can get so involved into your computers, tomorrow is Mother's Day. So you got today to go out and get the cards, the flower, and those other gifts to cover your butt so you don't look like a schlump and not having something for your wife or your mother or whoever on that particular day. You all set for tomorrow?
Never. Yeah, we're going down to the Genesee Country Museum. They're having a special... free for mothers at the museum.
Oh, and, sweet.
And they're doing chocolate tasting, and I think they're working on their own hard cider.
What so woman doesn't like chocolate?
Yep.
Even my wife, it's like, yeah. Oh, you fell down. You go boom.
One's upside down, one's backwards. So which do you want to do?
None. No, that's pretty cool. And I mean, again, we just want to make sure everybody else out there listening, because you can get so involved with your computers and everything else, lose track of time, you get into a project and all that, and it can get away from you. So you still got today to go out and get that last minute card or whatever. But tell you what, we'll go right to the phones, and we have Carl from Pottstown, PA.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Very good, sir. Yourself?
Pretty good. I have a question about burning a CD. I was successful in doing it. Let me tell you what I did. I downloaded a radio program, and it was about 2 hours and 50 minutes long, which is too long to fit on a CD. But I figured I could burn it to a CD if I burned it as an MP3 file onto the CD. So, and I was successful. I did it. But I still have a question, and that is that I use Windows Media Player to burn the CD as an MP3 file. Now, when I first downloaded the radio station program, I did it through Audacity, and I was experimenting. So I saved the file as both a WAV file and an MP3 file. This is before I even burned the CD. So I had this 2.5 hour, almost 3 hour radio program on the hard drive as both an MP3 file and a WAV file. The WAV file was much too big to burn directly to a standard audio CD. It was about 1.84 gigabytes.
Yeah, basically a WAV file is not compressed.
Right.
Right.
And usually the ratio, especially if you're doing radio, and if it's talk radio or anything else like that, you can change the compression rate to a lot lower.
With an MP3, which is compressed.
Yeah.
Right. Now, here's my question. When I just as an experiment, I knew it wouldn't work. I tried to burn this large file to a CD, and of course I got an error message saying the file was too large. So I went into Windows Media Player, and I adjusted the settings so that instead of burning an audio CD, it would burn a data disk. you know, which is generally how you create an MP3 file using Windows Media Player to burn a CD. And when I try to put the WAV file in to the Windows Media Player and burn it as an MP3 file to a CD, I knew it was going to fit because it was only about 130, 140 megabytes at that point. But the Windows Media Player kept telling me the file is too large. And I was saying, no, it's not too large. If I'm burning it as an MP3, it's not too large. But Windows Media Player, which was version 12, I think it's the latest version, didn't seem to know that. So what I had to do to finally succeed is I had to take the original WAV file, and don't forget there are two of them, the original WAV file, I was saving that as both the WAV file and as an MP3. I took the original MP3 WAV file, mm-hmm. and I burned it to the Windows Media Player as a data disk, and then it worked. So I finally got an MP3 file onto the disk. My question is, if I just put in the WAV file and I adjusted the Windows Media Player to burn data disk, it shouldn't have told me that it's too big because it would have reduced the size using the MP3 algorithm to the point where it would have fit, but it didn't seem to be smart enough to know that.
And again, you're talking about Windows.
Well, and which MP3 compression yeah. did you use? So you have to use a high enough compression to make the file small enough.
Right, yeah. And the actual data, the actual file, now that it's... I should be more clear. The actual original MP3 file, before I burned it to the disk, as generated by Audacity, was about 134 megabytes. So mm-hmm. that was more than small enough.
Yes, yeah, so that should have fit directly.
Yeah, it should have. But again, you're using Windows, and that's not always the smartest, crayon in the box.
Well, and in Windows Media Player, you were telling it a data disk, not an audio disk?
Yeah.
Right. At first, I tried audio disk. I knew it wouldn't work, and it didn't. So then I went to a data disk. But like I said, when I burned the Audacity MP3 file through the Windows player, adjusted for a data disk, so they were, both MP3s, both the original file was MP3, and I was telling the Windows Media Player to burn an MP3 file because I had it set for data disk, then it worked, and that was fine. The only time it didn't work is when I used the original 1.8 gigabyte file and tried to use the Windows Media Player to burn it as a data disk. It was still telling me that 1.8 gigabytes was too big.
Yeah, because your audio CD is only 700 megs.
Yep, 720.
Right, that's true. However, I don't think it should have told me that because since even though the input file was huge, I was still telling the Windows Media Player to burn it as a data disk. So it should have known this file is too big normally, but now I'm going to burn it as a data disk. Now it's not going to be too big to fit anymore.
Well, 1.8 gig is bigger than 700 megs, so it is still too big.
Yeah, it is.
Well, that's strange. I still don't quite understand that because even if it is bigger than 700 megs, mm-hmm. once it was processed through the Windows Media Player,
Windows Media Player doesn't process anything.
No, it doesn't
it
process
just plays.
It. It just plays it, and it tries to burn it to it. It doesn't know, until it runs out of space that, this file isn't going to fit there. It doesn't do the compression.
You have to do
You're
that
talking
as a
about a Windows
step.
Program that is not very brilliant in doing it. Nero was a great program for burning CDs and all that type of stuff. If you can get a copy of that, Nero would allow you to create music CDs.
There's a free program called MPEG Stream Clip
that
does audio and video transcoding into different formats, and that's a very common one to use today, too. I'll post a link for that in a moment.
Okay, and what's the name of that again?
MPEG Stream Clip.
MPEG Stream Clip, okay.
Yeah. I mean, again, Windows is not the best program to use, especially when it comes to doing stuff because they do the bare minimum. And, you'd think it would work way.
Let me revise that. MPEG Stream Clip is mostly for video. It will recode video
files. I bet you there's
files.
Still a version if you go out there for
Audacity Nero. will re-encode a file to different format and different compressions.
Well,
itself.
Like I say, I'm just so used to Nero. Nero, I could select off the menu right there whether I was taking a music CD or whether I was creating a data CD or copying a CD. The program was so versatile. And it handled both, and it knew automatically whether I was putting in a CD or a DVD. And it would handle both.
There is a, inside Windows Media Player, I'm trying to see what version this is, there is a RIP music tab where you can then tell it the format you want to convert it into.
And the compression?
And the compression, yeah. So you can change the quality and the compression. See, that's the other big thing about compression. The more you compress it, the lower the quality is.
Yeah, and for talk radio, you definitely, you know, you can pretty much go to the lowest quality for compression because it is talk. And but if you were doing music, yeah, you'd want to go higher.
No, looks like ripping is only for CDs. Because that was what we always, when you rip a CD, you choose what format you want. So I don't know if it does transcoding of existing files.
Look, there was a website for old software, and you might be able to see if you can get a copy of Nero. And Nero, like I say, was very good.
Well,
it used to come with all
Nero?
The... Huh?
Aren't they still making Nero?
I don't know. You know, I haven't burned a CD in so long. Because now I do so much up on the cloud. You know, I mean, as far as saving, you know, files and everything else, I just put it up to the cloud and I back up to other drives, so I don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I say, it used to come with every CD and DVD burner that you used to buy when I was building systems. It just came as part of the package and you just threw it in. So you could probably find a free copy of it. Out there.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll take a look.
Yeah.
Before I let you go, I just have one more CD burning question, if that's okay.
Go to there's a site called majorgeeks.com,
mm-hmm.
and they have links to stuff up there, and it's pretty much all virus-free, so you're safe and, you know, not getting all those other stupid ads and all that other bloatware that it wants to put into it.
Mm-hmm.
So try the majorgeeks.com.
Okay, I'll check that out.
Yeah, go ahead. What's your other question?
One other question is, if I'm trying to burn a file that's too big to burn to a CD, I kind of wish I had software that would let me burn the first CD, even though the file is too big, and then it would stop, and it would say, please insert the second CD, and then it would continue where it left off. I don't think Windows Media Player does that, or at least it didn't do it for me.
Now, are you doing it for music or data?
Just for talk radio programs, which would be either...
Throw it to
burn as a standard audio CD or
go to a DVD.
Huh?
Instead of burning to CDs, go to DVD.
Yeah, I could do that too.
DVDs hold a lot more.
That's true.
You know, and for quite a bit more than, you know, your standard CD, because your CD is only going to hold 720 megabytes.
Well, will most CD players, modern CD players that are built today, will they accept a DVD?
Most of them now, you don't get a CD burner. You get a DVD burner. CD burners have long gone away.
And a lot of computers don't even come with that anymore either. Yeah. There's no optical drive at all.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, if you go out to the store and look for, you won't find a CD-ROM drive. You'll find a DVD-ROM drive, but not CD.
And will that DVD-ROM drive burn both CDs and DVDs?
It'll work. Yep. It works on both. That's why I said. That's why I like the beauty of Nero. Nero would tell you whether you're going to. You would ask you. You're going to burn a CD or a DVD, and it would do it.
Okay. Hey, that's really good advice. Thanks.
Well, standard DVDs will hold up to 8 gigs per side, and you can get a double-sided one that then will do 16 gigs per disc. And then when you move up to Blu-ray, the standard Blu-rays are 25 gigs per side. And then there's an extended Blu-ray, which is 50 gigs per side. And there's a new Blu-ray format coming for the Ultra HD is 100 gigs per side. We're sort of seeing that. That's how the HD movies are being distributed, you know, on Blu-ray discs. But with so much coming to be internet streaming, the whole concept of physical discs is really, really dying off.
So that answer your question?
Yeah, thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, that's Tone tells us right now. We got to take a short break, but hey... You're here with Soundbites, and we encourage you to pick up the phones, give us a call at 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415, and we will be back very shortly after these great messages.
computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to this edition of Sound Bites. I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And I believe his name was Mike, did I say?
Oh, it's another window. Matthew, sorry.
Matthew, go ahead,
South
Matthew.
Buffalo.
South Buffalo. We got a lot going on here.
Hey, what's going on, fellas? My question is this. Every time I use Google Chrome, there's always a thing, or a freaking thing up there that says, you have an old dated version of Google Chrome. How do I fix that?
It comes up
as a toolbar in the top of the screen.
Yep, you have to go to the About Chrome command in one of the menus. I don't have it in front of me, so I'm not sure which one it is. But there's a Check for Updates button in the About box. It might be in the About colon config as well. Or you could just go to chrome.google.com and download it.
Yeah, download the latest version.
I don't have to have the latest version. I'm on an old PC. I'm on Vista. And every time it comes up, it bothers the heck out of me.
Yeah, my
other question is,
you cannot run
why isn't marijuana illegal in America? I mean, Canada's got it.
So the short answer is you cannot upgrade Chrome for Vista. Chrome does not allow... has basically broken support for the old operating systems, yeah. XP Vista, and on the Mac, Mac system 10.6 and 7, you can't upgrade to the latest version. And generally, the problem is there are security violations and exploits possible using the old versions. So it is very very dangerous to use an old version of Chrome or Firefox.
Well, here's the other thing.
And so that's what Nick has been saying. You have to upgrade your OS to be able to be safe and current.
And that's
the
whole thing.
Internet.
He's running Vista.
Yep.
Vista is so many generations old. I don't care if you clean it out. You go on to the internet and you're going to be infected again. And yes, all those programs aren't going to work correctly because he's so far behind. Yep. It's ridiculous. You're leaving yourself open to be exploited.
There is something to be said about using an old operating system but never connecting to the internet. Never go to web pages, never go to email. In fact, unplug your network card.
Yes.
And then the computer is probably okay unless you get files on CD from our earlier caller. So the danger is that there are so many exploits on the internet. The web browsers especially get updated quite frequently. So you always want to run the latest version. And with Chrome, you need to have at least Windows 7. Now, if your computer can run Vista, it could probably have upgraded to Windows 7.
Yeah, but not 10.
But not probably not 10.
No, I can guarantee you that wouldn't handle Windows 10. It would. No, I won't even say that it'll even try to even run it because it wouldn't be supported, that old of a version.
Yeah.
8, 7 and 8 was, 7 was even a stretch in some cases for a lot of, like I was telling a couple of weeks ago, various HP laptops that were running great with Windows 7, and the people go ahead and say, yeah, it'll run on that, and then they try to run it, and it won't.
Yeah, and for a lot of older PCs like that, you could download and install Linux, and then you can run the latest version of Linux with the latest operating systems, or you can install Cloud Ready, which is a free version of the Chrome OS that will let you install on an old computer, so you're basically running Chrome, but it is the current version of Chrome for your computer. And most of the operating system and applications that you need to use are available for Chrome. So that's a great way to bring an old PC up to current web browsers and not have to be worried about running old browsers and vulnerabilities to old exploits.
And that's what I've told folks before, that are even running Windows 7. We can go ahead and clean it up. But, you got to do due diligence and constantly stay on top of things. And run scans because there are holes, and they're not updating it anymore. So, be prepared for it.
And even when they are updating it, we may have heard there was a big malware burst through Europe a couple of days ago. And it turns out it was a known flaw in Windows that Microsoft patched in March, but it was part of the NSA leaked documents that came out last month. And so someone looked through that list of documents and exploited a known bug. But Microsoft had already patched it. But apparently millions of people, and this was like 20 different hospitals in Britain, got infected with this ransomware because they hadn't updated their systems.
Yep.
And so, you know, that's the March update they hadn't installed yet. So if your system
and May.
May, yeah. So if your system is more than a week old, you're probably vulnerable to something.
Yeah, exactly. All right, tell you what, let's go to the phones. And we got Walter. Go ahead, Walter.
How you doing, guys?
Good.
We're doing peachy, as somebody would say here in the studio.
Okay, great. Well, I'm calling regarding Carl from Potsdam's CD problem.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. Well, you see, I think it all depends on, he left out an important part of where he wants to play that CD.
Good point, yep.
Because here's what I have. I have an old CD player. All it will play is finished CDs. However, I go to my automobile, I can play an audio CD. I can play a CD-RW. It also has the capability of using reading data for audio. That is, I could a regular CD, an audio CD, maybe take about 10 songs. If you put it as data, you can now have 100 songs or even more on that CD.
Right.
So you put it in the machine, it finds the folder, opens it up, and bam, I've got 100 songs ready to use. And so what I'm getting at is that if he could write it as a data CD, he has the appropriate machine, he could then go ahead and hear his program for 2 hours.
Well, I think he was trying to use it as data, but his file is 1.8 gigabytes, which is too big to fit on a 700 meg CD. That is a good recommendation. If depending on what you're going to play it on. So if you're going to play it on a really old CD-only player, then you have to use a CD, which means you have to recompress the file to fit in under 700 megabytes.
Right.
But if you're using a newer CD player, that can probably play an MP3 data disc. It's still limited to 700 megabytes, but as you said, you can get a lot more songs on it. As an audio CD, you're limited to about 60 minutes. 74 minutes is,
right,
is the technical max.
Right.
So he had a three-hour show that won't fit as an audio disc.
Right, but he might be able to. If he's lucky, maybe he can go ahead and fit it into a data CD.
A data disc, but he'd have to recompress it so it's right, small enough to fit.
Right, and as you said, if it's just talk, boom, he might be in good luck.
Yep. Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, that's what it's all about.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's the one nice thing about the show. You know, we can come up with suggestions, and then, like I say, our listeners are out there, too, to offer their opinions, and that's what it's all about. I mean, we deal with a lot of stuff, and, you know, sometimes we can have information overload also, and it's nice to just have our callers call in and give their spin, because don't know it all.
And even with what we call MP3 players, those are sort of, MP3 players are on a downturn because everyone's playing from their phone anyway.
Yeah, I mean,
and there are better formats out than MP3, but that still seems to be that's the word everyone knows.
Well, I mean, just like this station, you know, you can download the Jazz app, plug your headset into the phone, and listen to us no matter where you go.
Yeah.
So there's no excuse that you can't be taking Jazz 90.1 with you everywhere, because there is a app out there, and we provide it. As a matter of fact, the app is going to have other information about the upcoming Jazz Festival that's coming down the road, so you want to definitely stay in touch with that. We've got the cruises going on. A lot of great stuff here at the station that you don't want to miss out, and you don't have to if you just take the time and download the latest version of the Jazz 90.1
app. And you can find that on the jazz901.org website down in the bottom right-hand corner.
Yep, and put it on there. And like I say, you'd never have to miss a version of sound bites either. But going back to that Windows, so many folks still, you know, and I understand they don't want to give up Windows 7 because it runs
or even
everything
older. And there's we understand the monetary issues to go from Vista to 7. It was $130 to buy 7.
Yeah, and now they're coming out with the latest version of Windows 10 update later this year.
The creator's update is starting to come out now.
Yeah,
the new Windows 10 S which is a small version of Windows 10.
For the phone?
For phones and for the Microsoft equivalent of Chromebooks.
Yeah.
What we're seeing is Chromebooks are outselling computers. They're outselling tablets, especially in the school market. And so Microsoft is seeing a missed opportunity there.
Well, that's where we said, you know, I mean, and I was telling my wife, I said, you know, the Chromebooks for schools are so great. Because they can hand them out to all the kids. They put those Gator cases on them. And, you know, they could drop them, whatever, which kids will do.
And they're $200 retail. So what do you suppose a school gets it if they buy 1,000 of them?
Yeah. And the thing of it is they go ahead and they preload it with their software. They only allow the kids to do school stuff. They can't go out surfing and doing other stuff other than relative research for, say, a project or that type of stuff. The school can control the environment. And the beauty of it is it can't get viruses, it doesn't get spyware, it doesn't get malware. And they don't pay for an operating system. It just runs Chrome. Yep. And if something tries to get in there and get fixed, you know, infect it, it just defaults back to the original hidden image, and it's all is good. And then the administrator, come the end of the year, he takes all those books, you know, Chromebooks back in, can wipe them. And they're all set for the next class coming out the following fall.
And most schools have already switched to using the free Google Docs rather than Microsoft. And so that's another place where Microsoft has lost out.
Lost money, yeah.
Yeah.
But again, they're trying to do too much too late. You know, they're getting on the bandwagon after, you know, Chrome has been out there. And we've been preaching it for a couple of years now, telling folks, you know, get a Chromebook. You're not paying, and what's doing it, I think, is even pushing it more, because even Windows S, you're going to have to pay for updates, and there's going to be other, you know, fees, you know, you can only get from the Windows Store various apps to run on that thing.
Which theoretically will make it a little bit safer, because you can't get a fake app from a fake website.
Right. But I mean, versus the Google Store, you know, I mean, you can go there and get so many apps. And
there are fake apps in Apple, Microsoft, Google, and all their stores, but they're caught and removed pretty quickly.
Yes, darn quickly. But again, but Microsoft is going to have full control on that, which is kind of, again, limiting themselves to, other apps. If they want to get in on it, they got to pay Microsoft. Whereas if they go with the Android system and Chrome, it's open.
Yep.
You know, and they can control. And again, the schools have full control, and it's free. They don't have to pay for the Google, like you said, the Google Docs, you know, spreadsheets and everything else, presentation, all that's there, and it's free. They don't have to pay. I don't even know what Microsoft 360, what that goes for now.
For individuals, it's $99 a year. So for a family where you have three or four computers, Office 365 is $99 a year. You get five computers, five phones, and five tablets. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Google Docs is free. LibreOffice is free.
Yeah.
On the Apple side, you get Apple's iWork suite for free. And it can read and write Microsoft files, no problem. The Google Docs can read and write Microsoft problems, no problem. So Microsoft is running into this interesting place where now they're the underdog. They're not the dominant anymore.
And the other thing, though, which Google Docs has had for the longest time, is being able to take a document and convert it to a PDF file.
Yep.
Windows Word, you weren't able to do that. And I don't even know if you still can, because, like I say, I don't use it.
You need third-party software, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, whereas Google, you know, the Docs, it's built in there. And it's just another feature that, you know, say I'm creating a document and I want to put it out there and I don't want people altering it, I just publish it as a PDF. Now they can get it, they can look at it, but they can't do anything to it.
Yep.
So, you know, it's Safeguard. And, again, that's always been there. It's been free and part of it. Microsoft doesn't offer that, so yeah.
Let's update that. In Office 2016, you can save as PDF now.
Oh, finally! How long did it take them to catch up?
Yeah,
I mean that's just like I say, been out there.
What I get always annoyed about is you see websites that that post PDFs, you know, like the IRS, you want to download tax forms to fill out.
Mm-hmm.
It says you must download Adobe Reader to view this file.
Mm-hmm.
No, you don't. You can download any PDF reader, but Adobe probably paid them some money to put the Adobe Reader logo on there.
Definitely.
So there's PDF readers built into Mac, built into Windows, built into everything, but people mistakenly download the Adobe Reader because they think they need it. And the problem is PDF is such a common format that there are a lot of malicious PDFs.
Yeah, and that Foxit. I love Foxit.
Foxit PDF. The Apple Preview comes with the Mac. So you can get a malicious PDF. You open it in the Adobe Reader, and you can be infected from that malicious file. So Adobe Reader has to be updated very, very frequently. It's one of those things like Adobe Flash that gets updated so much. The bad guys put out fake updates.
Yeah, it's out there, folks. So, you know. Again, just a word of caution, and a lot of folks believe that they have to use certain software, and, you know, call us and we can set you straight. And the phone numbers are 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415, and we'll be back with more great sound bites right here at Member Supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on Member Supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to this edition of Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I got another young lady in here. She's just sort of sitting very
moral support.
Yeah, my moral support.
Later there'll be immoral support.
That too. No, what I'm talking about, folks, is I got my lovely wife here too, joining me here in the studio. I wanted to join me this Saturday since this is her weekend. And all you other gentlemen out there with mothers and wives and that, make sure that you get out there ahead of time because it is Mother's Day tomorrow and it'll be a little late to go out there and find a card or anything else.
Actually, by tomorrow late morning, all the card shops will probably have removed their Mother's Day card and put up, what's next, Father's Day?
Yeah.
The next holiday will be there.
Yeah, it'll already be in there and getting ready for Memorial Day and everything else.
Yesterday, roses were $10 a dozen. Today, they're $50 a dozen.
Yeah, and imagine what they would be last minute for tomorrow.
Yep.
No.
My wife likes potted plants. Now, you cut flowers are pretty, but then they die in a couple of days. So we like potted plants, but unfortunately, in our house, they die in a couple of days. Potted plants don't do too well in our house.
Potted plants?
Yeah. A live plant in a pot.
Okay.
Too much sun or too much water. Now, Matthew brought back some cactus seeds from Arizona, and he's been trying to grow those, and they're not doing too well either. We had to go find some cactus soil.
Oh, yeah. It's got to be very dry.
Very dry, yeah.
Everything. Oh, yeah. She taught me a lot about the various cactuses when we were out there in Arizona. It's like, wow. So many different ones. And we have this calendar now from... I had to get the official Arizona highway calendar. And I got to admit, they do a darn good job. The photography for each month is beautiful. It's very stunning of the different cactus and the landscape of Arizona. It's very pretty out there. But
I told him he better have gotten some agave seeds, too, while he was there. If you're going to grow some stuff, let's grow it good.
Quality stuff.
So you got the aloe vera next to the agave. So, you know, if one doesn't work, the other one will.
Yeah, I
got
to get another aloe plant because that is so good for burns. I mean, I had one for a while that had to be in a good 15-inch pot and kept separating and separating. Of course, when I moved to the house where I'm at now, didn't survive the move very well. But I usually have pretty good luck in growing plants.
Yep.
Got an old Christmas cactus, my violets right now are doing pretty good. Yep.
And there's from the tech angle, there's a really disturbing trend in medical research and deforestation. most of our medical, you know, new drugs and whatnot mm-hmm. come from plants, from nature.
Yeah.
And with the huge deforestation through the Amazon, you know, through you know, pretty much everywhere, we're losing out on a lot of species of plants that might lead to the next cure for something.
Yeah, especially down in South America and yep. where they're doing a lot, like you said, forestry and everything else down there, chopping so much wood and that down. That's where they found a lot of different cures yep. for various diseases.
Yeah, I just read an article about Borneo, you know, tropical island mm-hmm. in Indonesia and Malaysia, and they're running into the same deforestation problems.
And that's one of the other things, you know, and we're tying this more or less all again to computers. I mean, and you wonder why. But you think about it now, folks. Most of the folks nowadays, when you go to your doctors, you can go online and see your whole medical history. And they're tying things, so many things together, whether you're going to this doctor or that doctor. I mean, I could be sick and be in another state, and they can pull up my medical records to see it because it's all there. Which, you know, I know a number of folks have sat there and said, well, yeah, Big Brother getting into my personal life and everything else. Well, when it can save your life, yes, that's it's a pretty big thing. And if they can, at one click, go to a website and see all the medicines you're on, because if you're unable to talk, thanks to computers now, you know, they can sit there and have all that information, any x-rays, blood work, anything else, it's all there in a computer.
And so it's really nice to have these electronic medical records now where you can look up your own data.
Yeah.
The problem is now that they're electronic medical records, it's easier for the bad guys to get them too.
That's the other thing. And that's why we tell folks, you know what, get creative with your passwords. We can't stress it enough. You know, so many folks, they get so lazy and they'll go, yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Or 8.
Yeah, it needs to be 8 characters.
Yeah, 8 characters.
And a symbol. So, exclamation point is always the symbol people pick.
Yeah.
When I'm asking people to create passwords for their stuff, it's almost always exclamation point. Or if you have to put a number, so it's a word and a number, yeah. It's always a 1.
Yeah.
And so the bad guys know this, too. So when they're trying to break passwords, that's what they use.
Yeah, and it doesn't take much for them to do that.
Get a password manager, you know, 1Pass or LastPass, or on the Apple devices, you've got Keychain already built in that will generate passwords for you.
And that's the thing, you know, and
write them down.
Exactly.
Password managers will remember for you, but it's nice to have a little notebook written down.
It doesn't, you know, hurt to create a spreadsheet and print it off, yeah. You know. Again, and put a password on that.
That printed off is key, because if you forget the password for your computer, it's hard to look at what your spreadsheet says because you can't get your password. But yeah, you know, password managers are very easy to use. There's a bunch of free ones, some very well regarded ones, LastPass and 1Password, and again, as I mentioned, Keychain on Apple devices, and it remembers passwords for you. It will generate passwords for you.
Roger, please call back. I'm sorry I slipped there, hung up on him by accident.
Phone systems that can handle multiple callers.
Oops. Well, I got going there and I hit the wrong button.
Too many buttons. It's like there's a zillion buttons in front of you and the wrong one will mess you up. But yeah, so it's and every time there's a password breach, we've talked in the past about have I been pwned. H-A-V-E, have I been, P-O-W-N-E-D. They have, oh my goodness, since the last time I looked, there's another 1 billion pwned accounts. Mm. Now, there's now 3.7 billion pwned accounts, and those are accounts that bad guys have the username and password for.
Yep.
So put in your email address, and it will tell you if your accounts have ever been lost.
Yep.
And if you use that same password somewhere else, you're screwed.
Yeah. All right, tell you what, let's go to the phones. We got Roger on the phone. Go ahead, Roger.
Hi, Nick. Got an odd problem that came up very quickly, and that suddenly my files are all set to read-only. I didn't do it, and this is on 2 computers, 2 different brands, my desktop, which is an HP, and my laptop is a Dell. And when I tried to switch them through properties,
mm-hmm.
I untick the box, and I hit apply. And I'll get the little thing running that is supplying it to all the files, to all the subfolders in that folder. And it'll say done. Well, it doesn't say done. It just goes away. I hit OK. And then hit properties again to open up the properties and look. and it's still marked hidden, or not hidden,
read-only.
Read-only, yes.
Usually, when you select the prop, you know, when you go select that folder, usually it's a checkbox that's checked there that, you know, selects it as they're all read-only.
So, yeah, it's a little square box. What I've often seen is that box will be dim. It'll be a dim black box,
yeah, but if it
which
is
means
checked,
it isn't really read-only. It just, some of the files you have selected might be.
Yeah.
And so if you open that file and try to write a change to it, are you getting a read-only error message?
Okay, if I attempt to, say, from a photo editor, export the file, a photo file, into that file, it won't do it. If I allow it to export into a new file and then cut and paste into there, I can do it.
Again, I think the settings, if you check the properties of that folder, they might be all read-only in there.
Well, that's what he's saying. He's unchecking read-only, and it doesn't stay. Which operating system are you on?
Windows 10.
Windows 10, and you're using the advanced change permissions section?
No, I've been using, let me open it right here in front of me. I go to properties, and under attributes, there is a dark square inside read-only.
Yeah, according to the list I found, you have to go to the security tab, then advanced, and then change permissions.
Okay, I've got advanced.
And you're trying to save it into a folder that is in your home folder, right? It's not in someone else's folder.
And you're running things as administrator, correct?
Well, that may be what you have to do. Do the change permissions as administrator. As administrator.
Okay, so I've just got to go deeper into the advanced attributes.
Probably, that you can change the permissions of the file.
And when you go
and you may need to change the permission of the folder above that file.
Well, that's the thing. He might when he right clicks on it, say run as administrator.
Yeah.
So you have the administrator credentials to do it.
So it's possible that the file may not be read-only, but the folder could be.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't save anything to that folder.
Yeah.
You're trying to save to that file, and you can't because the folder's read-only. So
okay,
you may have to go up a level and choose the folder.
The file's on my desktop, and it's primarily a lot of images that I'm prepping to go on a website.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a separate folder on my desktop. When I right-click that folder, I get the box of check, read-only, and it says only applies to files in folder. If I untick that box, hit apply, and then it'll go through with the little meter showing that it's applying it to all the subfolders in there.
Mm-hmm.
That goes away. I hit OK. And then if I right-click that same file again, it will come back up.
As read-only.
So you may have to go to the folder above that file to make the change.
Because it's a shortcut on your desktop. You might want to go to the actual folder on your drive and change the properties there.
So I want to go into my C drive for it.
Yeah. Go there and then right click on it. And usually you can say run as administrator.
Well, that's only if you're running a program, but when you're trying to change
the file manager.
When you're running the
file manager, right click on the file manager, say run as administrator.
And inside that security tab, when you get to your permissions.
Yep.
You can make sure that your username is listed as having full control of that file.
Yeah, and you can see what you...
All right, when I go into security, there's the other interesting thing. It says group or usernames, and my name is sandwiched in between system, all in capitals, and then below my name is administrator, desktop.
All right, when you select your name, what features are underneath that are checked?
Okay, when I select my name, everything is checked with the exception of special permissions, but that's all in gray.
Okay, but and full control is checked on?
Yes.
Okay, he's got full rights.
So you should have rights to that file. So you need to go to the folder above that file and check those permissions there.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, I'll give that a shot. I tried Googling it, and all I get are problems going back to, like, 2012 and 2015.
This has been a common
program. The system.
Yeah, it's been a while.
It's been a common program in Windows for a long time. Similar issues occur in the Mac too, because the systems are now inherently set for multi-user.
Yeah.
Every user has their own private file space. And so, therefore, the operating system has to keep track of who has permission to see what files. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it gets messed up, and you don't have permission to see the files you want to see.
It locks you out as far as doing anything and manipulating it.
All right. Well, I'll give it a shot. Thanks
a lot.
All
right. Let us know.
Okay.
All right. Take care, my friend.
Thank you. Bye.
Yeah, on the Mac side, I can go to the command prompt and do a change ownership and force the permissions.
Well, like I say,
I don't know if there's a similar command prompt in Windows to do that.
If he's got the file manager on the desktop and he right clicks on that and runs that as the administrator.
Well, then you have to find the file manager application, which is in Windows System 32, something or other.
Yeah, well, you can do down the run command. You can say file manager. And it'll pull it, it'll put it up there, and you can right click on that and say run as administrator. And then that way.
Is it file manager or file man? You have to know the name of the process to run it. That's what makes it a little more annoying.
See, that's what I love about that classic shell. I just put a shortcut to, my computer and out there, and I can say run as administrator. And, and it gives me the rights to do everything just for the heck of it.
Yeah, because generally speaking, you do not want to run as administrator all the time. And both Mac and Windows do this by default, and it's really annoying. You create an account, it's the administrator. Administrators have special permissions and can do dangerous things.
Yeah, they can get in trouble. And speaking of trouble, we're coming up on the first hour of being completed, but you can stick around for one more hour. Right here, if you pick up the phones and give us a call at 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415 for another hour of sound bites and answering all your related computer questions. We are here and we're gladly taking them and trying to resolve various issues, whether it's Mac, PC, we've got it all. But you got to pick up the phones and give us a call, and we will be back in just a few moments right here at Member Supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve next on Member Supported Jazz 90.1.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to this edition of Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And you are listening to Soundbites, and we have Steve on the phone. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, good afternoon, gentlemen.
You want to turn your radio down, please?
It isn't on. Okay.
Weird, all right. we heard ourselves there for a minute.
Would you guys tell us the common everyday, I've got a Windows machine, I've got a Chromebook, I've got a Linux machine, what do I have to do to protect myself from a ransomware attack?
One of the biggest things is have a very good backup.
Yeah.
Because if you do get attacked, you can always go to your backup files.
Right. And Chromebooks, you don't have to worry about that. All you got to do is, it protects itself. The minute you see, as I tell everybody, Steve, for the most part, when you see those ads, they come on your screen and say, you're being held for ransomware. The best thing I can tell you to do is immediately before doing anything else, looking at that screen and being horrified, hit the power button. Shut that thing down.
All you really need to shut down is your browser, but hitting, you know, shutting the whole computer
down. Well, sometimes,
down.
No, it'll lock up the browsers on some folks' machines.
It tries to spawn new
So that's
Windows,
why I say just generically, just turn it off. It'll boot back up, say in Windows 10, say, oh, you didn't shut down safely. We're going to restart. All right, go ahead.
And most of the malware infections these days, so the problem is there's real infections and then there's fake infections. Yeah. Most of the real infections are coming as attachments in email.
Yep.
Never click a link in email. Never open an attachment from email. Even from somebody you know, because they could be infected, and it can be lying. It's very easy to lie in an email. And one of the fact that's how the European malware is going around. It's a infected Word file that's coming in an email, and one of the common ways they do it is it comes from human resources, and it's named benefits package. And so I better open that up. I want to see what benefit.
Yeah.
And it's fake and infects the computer. So in general, you can protect yourself by you know, safe computing. Don't open links. Don't open attachments. If you get a message, an email message claiming there's something wrong in your PayPal account, go to your browser, type paypal.com yourself. Don't click on the link.
The one rule of thumb that I have always preached, as you know, Steve, for a number of years, if you have to stop and think for more than 10 seconds about an email, whether to open it or not, don't.
Well, and that's part of the problem is the people don't think, oh, it's my benefits package. I better check that.
No. Yeah. Call. There's this thing called the phone. Or you can also do another very antiquated thing, and that's, you know, write a letter. That's safe. It'll go to the mail. It'll get to them. If you want to know more about it, actually contact the company. Like Steve said, you know, call.
But there's a problem there. We had a customer last week got ripped off for over $5,000. She had a problem with her printer, and the screen said, call HP. So she Googled HP and called the first number she found, which was not HP.
Right.
So go to the website of the company, HP.com, Apple.com, Microsoft.com.
Yeah.
And look up a phone number that way. You can't trust any random phone
number
you find.
And for the folks that are out there, there is no way, never going to happen, that Microsoft will call you and the IRS is not going to call you to let you know that there's an issue with your computer or anything else.
Like well, one thing I do when I give someone my email address so they can contact me, I say put something in the subject line so I know it's you. Because if I don't know who it's from, I don't open it.
That's perfect. Like I said, if you folks have to think about it for, you know, more than a few seconds, delete it. If it's really that important, they'll contact you again.
Yep. And typically they send you a postal letter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or if it's a message from your bank, you know, go to your bank.
Yeah, exactly. Or they'll say, like you said, they'll send you a notice in the mail. You know, if this or that, we need to speak to you.
Yep. And if all else fails and you end up getting infected with ransomware, real ransomware that encrypts your data, have a backup drive. Mm-hmm. Have an offsite backup, you know, or a backup not connected to your computer.
Right.
So you just delete your files and restore from your backup, and then you don't have to worry about losing anything. In fact, we have heard stories online about companies that get infected with ransomware, and a lot of times the ransom is relatively low, $50,000, $100,000, and they'll pay it because that can be cheaper than the downtime of rebuilding
their databases,
hundreds of computers. Yeah,
yeah.
And we've also heard one of the podcasts I listened to was talking with a CEO of a rather large company, and they've been stockpiling bitcoins just in case they get attacked. Most of the ransomware wants to be paid in bitcoins, which is an anonymous digital currency.
Mm-hmm.
And so the CEO is stacking up bitcoins waiting to be attacked. Jeez. No.
No.
Stop the attack from coming in the first place.
Exactly. Spend that money in protecting your system.
And we heard on Security Now did a story about an IT guy at a company which would test the employees by sending an email with a link in it. And so if they click the link, the page pops up and says, you shouldn't have clicked that link. This could have been a malicious file. Please come and see IT for training.
That's good. No, that's perfect.
Yeah.
You know, get the get their head out of their butt and make them think about what they're doing, because, hello, too many folks think, oh, that's my computer at work.
Yep.
Oh, no, you don't have the right to go in there. Sorry, until you pay for that computer, it is not your computer. It's a piece of equipment that the company provides, and they can go into it at any given time.
And even though the instance of actual viruses and malicious programs on phones and tablets is relatively low, you will still get the fake messages in your web browser, because it's basically an ad on a website. There's an ad for tires, there's an ad for cars, there's an ad that says you're infected with a virus, call this phone number.
Yep.
Are they attacking the Linux machines?
There are some Linux attacks, yes, but the biggest threat these days are the fake attacks.
Mm-hmm.
So you're running Linux, you're running a web browser, and you get a message saying you're infected with a virus, call this phone number.
Well, Nick
it's
was
lying.
Yeah, and Nick was right here sitting with his Chromebook, and the ad came up and said, your Windows machine is totally infected. Call this number. Right.
Which means they didn't take the 5 seconds extra it would have been to ask his browser agent what browser he was on. Because then it could pop up the right logo.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know.
So not only are the bad guys lazy, they're stupid.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're not the brightest crayon in the box.
So the biggest thing to keeping yourself safe on the internet is you.
Yeah.
Risky behavior and unfortunately risky behavior is using the computer.
And it can be going to perfectly good sites, because certain sites can get hacked and they have what they call hover points. You could be just scanning. I didn't click on anything. You don't have to. They can plant what they call hover points, and you could be near something that you're looking at, and boom, it'll trigger behind the scenes, this stuff to come down to your machine.
Yeah, just so. Because an ad can contain JavaScript and that code runs automatically, just going to the website can infect the computer. If it's a real infection, fortunately these days, most of the infections are fake messages.
Right.
Because it's easier. As I said earlier, you know, bad guys are lazy. It's easier to make a fake message than to actually go to the trouble of writing code.
Yep, exactly. So did we answer your question, sir?
Oh, you certainly did. Thank you.
Oh, your pleasure is all ours. Thanks for calling.
And pass it on to the less computer sophisticated people in your family.
Yeah.
You know, don't trust these messages. If you get a message, you know, have them call you or us. Yeah.
Yeah, I do get those calls.
Yep. All righty.
All right, thanks, guys.
Teach them.
Bye. Yep. And that's so you know, probably most of the people listening here are the tech support for their family, and you know, help them, teach them. You know, make sure they understand that these messages are probably fake, and never call the phone number that pops up on screen. A lot of people will run an antivirus program, but then they'll call whatever phone number pops up, not the company that antivirus they bought.
Yeah. Like I
said, and if you don't have an antivirus screen program and your computer says you have a virus, it's obviously lying because you don't have an antivirus program.
Yeah, exactly, and that's where I can't stress enough to folks. Because I've seen a number of them we've had come in that, you know, it was stupid ransomware that popped up there, and all they have to do is turn it off. And then you bring it back up, and you can then clean the machine by running malware bytes and, you know, super anti-spyware and just doing the full tango.
Yep.
Just cleaning the system up just in case there's other remnants in there that might trigger it. Again, if you're going to a site, it can do that. Yep. So
Well, and a lot of the browsers have added features. So the bad guys always take advantage of features the good guys use. When you open your browser, most of the browsers have a setting where it will reopen all the windows you had open last time. Because, you know, that's a nice convenience. I had this window open last time. I probably want it open again this time. So if you have a fake virus warning pop up, and then you quit your browser and reopen your browser, it conveniently reopens that last window again. Unfortunately, that is a bad problem. And then you get that fake message again. So you may want to check in your browser settings to turn that feature off. On the Mac, it is it's under System Preferences and Appearance to reopen last closed windows. Not sure on the other OSs, but there's a similar feature there. Mm-hmm. You do not want it to open the last windows from your last session because it could have been a malicious window.
Yep. I tell you what, we're going to go to the phones. We got Phil from Greece. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, hi, fellas. Thanks again for a wonderful show.
Thank you, sir.
My question is, I run a Windows 10 on a Toshiba laptop, and whenever I basically update Windows, or when it updates itself, I get that circling dots with no indication of progress being made or what to do next. And basically, I can leave it running for about 4 hours, and nothing happens. I shut it down manually, start it back up, and every so often it'll go right to where I want it to go, meaning start over again. Other times it comes back and keeps the spinning down. Is there anything that is documented as to how to handle this, or just keep doing what I'm doing?
Well, generally speaking, that means something went wrong somewhere, and it can't finish what it was doing,
yeah.
And it can't even give you an error message of what it was doing.
Because it wasn't sure. Because it never completed, you know, not like the old Windows days when you'd see that bar go across the percentage and you'd watch it slowly go across.
So one of the things we might suggest is go to securitytango.com and dance the entire Security Tango.
Run the tango.
A lot of times if there is a malicious program in your computer, it will prevent updates, because many times the updates will patch the hole the malicious program is using.
Well, I think that's probably as much as you can tell me, and I certainly will go run the dango. Is there anything special on a Toshiba laptop, or is that just the same basic stuff?
Pretty much, You want to go to the Windows Vault so that you get the right programs for Windows.
Yep, and run those.
Wonderful. Thanks,
all right.
Fellas.
Yep. You're welcome. Have a great day.
Sometimes you can go to the event viewer or event manager and see the lower-level system messages. Usually that doesn't help you. Unless you actually wrote the program that crashed and can understand the message, but there may be some message where you know can't open file, and then you can see what file it's trying to look for. I mean, one of the things I see a lot is hard drives start to age.
Mm-hmm.
You get a disk I/O error.
Yeah.
So it has to keep retrying to read that file it was looking for, and that's a sign that your disk is probably dying, and you want to have a backup.
Yeah, and the other indication too, with a lot of the, if you go to your C drive, you'll see folders with long number names. And usually, used to be before when there was a bad sector in the with Windows, it'd sit there and say found folder.
The check disk files?
Yeah, and the number, you know, meaning that the hard drive's starting to go. You will see this on Windows, too, as it starts creating these other folders with, you know, they're like 20 numbers long, and they're just full of, you know, that it couldn't find it and other stupid stuff that you can try to delete, but yeah, sometimes that can be an indication that you know, the hard drive's getting ready to go, too.
And as market pressures have driven prices down, quality has dropped as well,
yeah.
So things don't last as long as they used to. And so we talk about making a backup. One of the things that we often see is the most convenient way to have a backup is another hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, if one hard drive dies, another hard drive can die too. Just the likelihood that both your internal drive and external drive die at the same time is kind of low.
Yeah, that's not too often.
But we talk about having the 3-2-1 backup strategy. You want to have three copies of your data on two different types of media, so say a hard drive and a CD drive, and one of them should be off-site.
Mm-hmm.
So have it outside your house just in case something happens there.
There you go. All right, tell you what, and that does it for this part of the show. We will be back in a few minutes right here at member-supported Jazz 90.1. Don't forget, pick up the phones, give us a call at 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415, and we will be back shortly with more of Soundbites here at member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to this edition of Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And as you can, folks, notice, Nick took the day off, as we all need to once in a while. But we
That was Jay Giles just playing there, and we should express our condolences to his family. He passed away a few weeks ago. Jay Giles, one of the bands I grew up with. Every time that song comes on, he just passed away.
Yeah.
He was, 72, I think he was?
Wow.
Yeah. All the bands I grew up with are old now.
Well, I just saw last night on Undercover Boss, they had a famous person, they had Hootie from Hootie and the Blowfish.
Yeah, Darius Rucker.
Yeah, and he was out in, I think it was Texas or someplace, and discovering they had three people, young artists, and he was going to support their music career. And they couldn't believe it because, you know, he's bald, and here they put this wig on him. And he, matter of fact, he tried going out on one street corner singing in that, and he was off key. And this other artist that he was talking to, you know, he was playing it up really good, like he couldn't play and all this. Yep.
I read once that Larry the Cable Guy entered a Larry the Cable Guy lookalike contest.
Yeah.
Came in third.
Oops. All right, let's go back to the phone. We've got Victor in Irondequoit. Go ahead, Victor.
Good afternoon, guys. Last week, a caller called in and asked Nick what he would use to record cell phone calls. And Nick brought out the one that he does use called Bold Beast Recorder. So I looked it up, and I put it on. And I bought the pay version, which is a lifetime license for $10. And it's kind of cool because there's no ads. And the pay version, it records all the calls. And then after the call is ended, it gives you the option to delete it or keep it. And it's pretty cool because it's very, very clear. And it's easy to set up. And I just thought I'd bring that up.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, we'll get a link posted to that now that that I'm here to post links today.
Yeah, it was really nice because I've always wanted something to record calls just in case. And with the free version, there's no ads either, but you have to tell it, yes, I want to record this call, or no, I don't. And me being the lazy slob that I am, I wanted to pay one so I don't have to do that. So it worked out good.
No, yeah. It's not being lazy. We just get into a comfort zone.
It was. Yeah, you're right, Dave. It is. But it's kind of nice. I mean, it's easy to do it, and you've got 10 different modes, so you can check out different calls and see what mode is the clearest. And in my particular case, yep, the first one was fine. I just left it.
And the pay version is only $10. So
yeah, $10 for lifetime.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. You can spend that on so many other things, and like you say, for the convenience.
It was, and it's really, really nice. And I don't even think about it anymore.
Oh, that's
great.
Know?
I mean, you never know that. I haven't really had personally a case where I've had to have calls recorded, but then you never know.
You never say never.
Never. Right. Well, thank you, guys.
Hey, yep. Take care. Have a good weekend.
You too.
And it will always turn out that one time you wish you had the recording.
Exactly, and you won't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, was in the olden days with answering machines, you used to have the cassette tapes in your answering machine, and you could keep someone leaves a message for you, you could keep the tape. Nowadays, it's all digital, and you don't have that digital tape anymore. And it's sometimes tricky to get that call saved so that you can keep it, especially like a deceased loved one that left a message for you, and now you don't have that message anymore. Deceased loved ones, that's been a theme at our shop last couple of weeks. We've got three phones have come in with deceased loved ones' pictures on them, and the phone is dead.
Dead.
And
they want you to get it back.
Trying to get it back. One of them, the phone was supposedly water resistant, but apparently not enough. And and so when we open it up, the chips, there's chips that are shorted out. There's burns and scorch marks. And so we sent it off to Commercial Forensic Recovery Service.
Yeah.
They're pretty sure they can get the data back, and it's going to cost $2,000.
Again, that's where, yep, you know, nowadays
hit
folks,
that backup button for free before the problems exist.
Mm-hmm. It's there. I mean, all the phones nowadays, you know, like my Google phone, it automatically, as far as, you know, photos and everything out, it automatically for me backs it up to the cloud.
Yep.
It's set to do that, and I don't even have to think about it. Same with my contacts. If I add contacts, boom, it syncs every night, yep, and updates it.
And the biggest thing are pictures, and pictures are the biggest thing that you want to keep safe, and well, so that, make sure they're being backed up.
And that's one thing I always tell folks. You know, they say, well, I got to back up this, and this. I say, all right, tell you what, do your priorities first. Photos are always the most important thing,
yep,
because if you lose those, you can't get those back. They're gone, you know, and especially of loved ones and everything else or special moments that this was the one that
we
you
can always
have
another kid to take new baby pictures, right?
Huh?
Lose the picture. You lose
what are
the,
you smoking?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We see that. They've lost baby pictures, and you know,
yeah,
my wife is going to kill me.
But yet, you know, the documents, they can always be recreated if push comes to shove. Like I said, it's the photos. So that's why I tell folks, always get your photos together, and then we can put them up on the cloud. I was just discussing this with my wife about doing the same thing. You know, we'll get all of them together. She's got a couple different machines and putting it now on one drive. We'll get them all together, sort through what you want, and then I'll push them all up onto the cloud. They're there. They'll be there forever. And that's the other beauty about the Google Photos. I could be, say, out in California visiting somebody, and I can pull up my phone, or I can log onto their computer, go into the Google account, and bam, there they all are. I mean, document everything. I have access to it.
You get unlimited storage of photos less than 16 megapixel, which pretty much all your cell phone photos are these days.
Here's the other beauty of it, folks. All right, say you know you're out traveling somewhere, and you happen to lose your phone, and you're trying, because we're all creatures of this habit, is we put everything in our phone, and all of a sudden it's just, we don't memorize the phone numbers, we just memorize the picture or the name. We tap on it, it calls.
Speed
you
dial.
Don't know their number, because it does it for you. You put it in one time a couple years ago, and you don't do it. Well, that's the other beauty of having the Google account. That if I was, say, somewhere, and I need to get hold of a family member, I don't have their number, I can log into my Google account off of any computer, go into contacts, and look it up.
Yep.
Write it down, and I can call them because it's backed it up for me.
You know, speed dial 3 is nice, but if you're not on your own phone, you know, it's hard to remember what numbers are anymore.
Yeah.
And it's getting hard to find an actual phone book anymore, too.
Exactly. All right, tell you what, let's go to the phones. We've got Ed from Henrietta. Go ahead, Ed.
Yeah, Chrome, that's not why I called you, but I was talking to somebody that works for Samsung, and I've got Avast on my phone, and he said it's kind of overkill. He didn't come out and say that, but he kind of suggested that, because I guess, you know, the theory is Google boasts that they're virtually unhackable. But anyway, my question is, he said he gets all of his protective data, some outfit called AVR, it's Apple Victor Richard. I never heard of that, and I don't know if you guys knew that was for businesses or for just anybody could download that, because I guess it's got free this, free that, free malware, free whatever, you know. And I didn't know if that was a legit thing or if that was just something for businesses.
I haven't heard of that one.
No, I haven't heard that. And again, I'm sorry, I'm old-fashioned in that I don't believe any one program can do it all. That's why when it comes to security, you know, the spyware and malware, we recommend two programs. Because one goes deep into the file system, the other goes deep into the registry. And they sort of complement each other, and that way you're covering both bases.
What are those? I'll get them.
AVG is for, you know, your antivirus. Super Anti-Spyware and Malware Bytes. Super Anti-Spyware and Malware Bytes are two that we recommend, and Super Anti-Spyware runs in the background, and Malware Bytes, you got to click on it, but again, you can pay for the paid versions, and it'll automatically do that for you.
And your friend is kind of right on phones, because Google and Apple vet the apps that come into the phone. It's less likely to be infected, but there have been cases where there are malicious apps, and they're removed pretty quickly, but there is a potential vulnerability there before they get removed.
That's the nice thing about my Google phone, though. Again, it's the Chrome.
Yeah.
Chrome operating system is, matter of fact, when I got my Google phone, it didn't come with, you know, like a lot of the phones that you get, they have all this pre-installed software.
Right, all the Samsung stuff or the Huawei stuff. You know,
yeah,
it's just
and
a pure
the YouTube
phone.
And the Facebook and all that. No, you've got to put on the phone what you want, and I love it. But yet it automatically...
I'm sorry, you said AVG and what was the second one, Malware Bytes?
Malware Bytes and Super Anti-Spyware.
And those are anti-malware programs.
Yep.
Which are technically not viruses, so that's why the antivirus programs don't find them.
I got a bad connection. Say that again, the super what?
Super anti-spyware.
Oh, anti-spyware, good. Okay.
Tell you what,
those are listed.
I appreciate that. Very good. That's
sure.
Good to know. Thanks
and
very much.
Yeah, all those programs are listed on our Security Tango website as well.
Yeah.
I think we lost them, yeah. So you can go to securitytango.com and see the list of programs that we also recommend for cleaning your machine after the fact. But they're also good for preventative maintenance. To clean your machine before the fact. It's not a bad idea to run the anti-malware programs once a week or so. You never know what you're going to catch before it becomes a problem. And that is often an issue we see with our customers, both Dave and I. Someone will come in, we'll you know, clean out their system, and then a month later they're back because they've got infected again. And it's a dangerous world. And we used to be able to say, don't go to CD websites, you know, don't go to pirate sites, don't go to porn sites. But now the malicious threats are coming from legitimate sites, you know, CNN and BBC, Forbes. They've all been hacked at their end with malicious ads.
Yep.
And so just going to regular websites can infect you.
Yep.
So installing the programs from Security Tango, running them occasionally to keep yourself clean is another good way to do it.
Yeah, and Super Anti-Spyware will run automatically in the background. But again, folks, if you're using it and you use them for a while and you find them beneficial, pay for them. It helps support these programmers.
And so they'll keep making the program.
Yeah, and the efforts that they're doing. And, oh, it keeps you protected. So tell you what, we'll go to the phones now. And we got Gary from Rochester. Go ahead, Gary.
Hello. Again, thanks for taking my call. I called last week, and I wanted to give you just a quick follow-up on the advice you gave me. It was helpful.
Uh-oh.
And then I have another problem.
We did?
That, again,
wait a minute. You said
to the first one.
Wait a minute, Gary. You said
what I called about was last week that it was hard to get back on the Internet after what seemed to be an interruption caused by me, that a power strip on the computer had been clicked off, and then I put it back on.
Uh-huh.
I called the ISP Frontier. They tried a number of things, and then we're going to send out a technician.
Oh, yeah. I remember.
You remember that now?
Yeah.
And later in the show, someone called and had started to suggest some things and didn't realize that I was on Frontier. He thought I had been on Spectrum.
Right.
At any rate, the tech didn't come, so I called and found that there had been 30 other people in this area who'd lost Internet service. So it really wasn't me who had caused the problem, even though that power strip had been clicked off.
Just a coincidence.
Yeah, just the timing.
Back on.
Yep.
So you're still batting 1,000. It wasn't your fault.
Great.
It was the ISP.
Yeah, sometimes it's not you, it's them, think it's you.
Well, that's why I had to say right off the bat, Gary, that we got it right. You know, that's good for us.
Yeah.
Once in a while, we do get lucky.
No, you're very good.
Yep.
I do have another problem if you have time.
Sure.
I'm not sure. This relates to the same ISP because they also supply my email, and it is Frontier. And as you know, they use Yahoo, who was hacked and didn't reveal it till a year later. And they tried to do some fixes. And, of course, one of them was to, get new passwords. And most recently, as you probably know, they have put out a fix called, and Nick understood it when someone mentioned it. I think it's OAAUTH.
Yeah.
And I did all that. Now I'm trying to send an email, and I've got a screen that came up that I'd like to, if I could, just read to you and see if you have a suggestion about what to do. I'll go ahead with it. I got a screen that says you're about to override how Thunderbird identifies this site. And then in big black caps, legitimate banks, stores, and other public sites will not ask you to do this. And there's a big yellow sign with an exclamation point in it that says server. And it says location, smtpfrontier.com/465. And then it says to click. Then there's a button on next to that says Get Certificate.
So what that message is warning you is you're trying to make an encrypted mail connection, which is good, but something isn't right with the encryption. And if you get the certificate, you can try reading the certificate and see what it's telling you is wrong. What my guess is that you're trying to connect to Frontier.com's mail server.
Yes.
And so the certificate is coming from Frontier, but you're being forwarded to Yahoo. And so that's what you're getting. Hang on the line a minute, and we will pick this up after this break. And so join us coming up here at member-supported Jazz 90.1. Studio line 966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415 on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
And welcome back to Soundbites. You're listening to Jazz 90.1. I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And we had, who was Gary on
Gary,
the phone?
Yep.
Go ahead, Gary.
Gary. And Steve was explaining to me about the meaning of
the certificate. So when you go to a website, there is a certificate that site gets to prove they are who they assert they are.
Right.
So if you try going to a website and the certificate doesn't match what the website says it is, then you get a warning message like this.
Right.
And so what's likely happening is that you're telling Thunderbird to go to Frontier.com to get mail, and so you're getting the Frontier certificate. And Frontier is then sending you to Yahoo.com to pick up the mail, which is not Frontier.
Right.
So Thunderbird is warning you that you're trying to go one place, but you're really ending up someplace else, and these names don't match. So that may be what the error message is in the certificate setting, is that the host name mismatch, because you're going one place, but there's certificates for another place.
Okay.
If that is the message, then you're probably okay just to say continue. You may want to even change your Thunderbird settings to use the Yahoo mail server directly instead of using the Frontier server, because then you're connecting to Yahoo using the Yahoo certificate.
Okay. But
is a tricky thing with Frontier email, because they are using Yahoo for their back end.
Yeah.
We're having a lot of people with problems getting things configured, their email. One of the things we have run into to make it a little easier is when you're adding your account to Thunderbird or other mail programs, tell it it's a Yahoo account. And then it will use all the Yahoo server names, and then just put in your Frontier address as your email address. And that can often work better and set the security up better for you as well.
Okay. It's interesting. I'm just trying to send an email to someone, but it's not her address that's the problem. It's the server.
It's the server, right.
In my email program.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, your email program is trying to go to Frontier, and Frontier is saying, no, go to Yahoo.
Yeah.
And so Thunderbird is seeing that name change and warning you that there might be a problem.
Yeah,
So it could be you're going to a fake email program, and Thunderbird is trying to warn you.
It
can't tell if that's real or fake.
Wouldn't it be better just open up the browser, go directly to the Yahoo Mail?
Sort of, but Yahoo Webmail is filled with ads.
Yeah.
One of the reasons that I really don't like Yahoo, because there's so many ads on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And but, because of all of the breaches, you might want to go to Have I Been Pwned, and put in your email address and see if your password has been lost by one of the breaches.
Huh. There is another warning on here that says, in a big cap or in big bold letters, outdated information. This certificate is not currently valid. It may have been stolen or lost.
Yeah, right. You might have been hacked. And like I say, you might want to look into a different email program.
Yeah, and if your
certificates, strongly advised.
If your certificates are out of date, you may need to update Windows to get the latest certificates.
I have updated Windows. I got the latest upgrade on the 9th. Or the latest update on the 9th, and it did download. It is Windows 10 1670. It's not 1570, but so that's up to date. And all I do run the Security Tango, and just as you do suggest, I run malware and
that's not the issue. It's your mail program.
It's your security and specifically the security certificates within the mail program.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Okay. You got to look into that.
All right. Thank you so much.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, sometimes by reading that certificate chain, you can kind of figure out what's happening. Certificates will expire on certain days, and oftentimes when they expire on a weekend, nobody noticed before the company, everyone went home for the weekend. So you start getting certificate error messages until someone notices it and renews the certificate.
Yep.
That could be the problem. Maybe one of those certificates has expired and they need to renew it at their end. So if you go into the certificate details, you might be able to tell what the actual problem is.
All right. Well, we got Joel from Pittsburgh on the phone right now. Go ahead, Joel.
Hi, guys. Just wanted to reinforce something. I was out driving, and I heard the last end of Steve's discussion on the hacking that went on, and I wanted to really reinforce something that I heard him say. I work with an organization that helps people with computers and technology, and not a week goes by when I don't see someone, usually an older person, that has been hacked by a pop-up ad or a phone call or one of these crypto hacker things. And I thought Steve's advice to the folks that are younger and understand this technology and know about these scams, to go out and talk to their older folks, their parents, their uncles, cousins, whatever, and let them know not to pick up the phone or to hang up the phone when one of these people calls. Microsoft is never going to call.
Yep.
The pop-up ads, the 800 numbers are all scams. And just help the older folks, because what I've seen is that people get more trusting as they get older.
Yeah, because the computers make their lives so much easier, and they want to believe everything because, it's just the way it is, and because you can find out so much good there.
And we're programmed to obey science.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's why, again, I always tell folks if they get those ransomware signs, turn the computer off.
And we have actually seen a lot of that malware targeting older people. We had a customer come in who said he got a message that his grandson had been kidnapped, and they wanted $10,000 in iTunes cards.
Yeah.
Well, there's one little hint there that it was fake.
Yeah.
But he didn't bother to call the grandson first. He just went to the store and started buying iTunes cards.
I can go you one better on that. I spoke with a lady who got a call from her grandson. This was a stranded traveler scam.
Yep.
Saying he was in Mexico, his passport and money had been stolen. Now, here's the deal. Her actual grandson was in Mexico at the time.
Wow.
Okay? How did these people know this?
Well, some folks can hack travel records.
Well, and
Facebook. Facebook.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
they,
too.
They were able to, they were able on to Facebook, see on Facebook who this person was. They got her name. They got her phone number.
Yep.
They saw who her friends were. They saw her grandson saying, I'm in Mexico.
Yeah.
They called her up. And fortunately, she was smart enough not to fall for this. But these guys can be pretty sophisticated.
Oh, yeah. They're not dumb by any means.
That traveling scam has been fairly common for years.
I'm stuck
at the airport. My passport's been stolen. Can you wire me money so I can fly home?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's absolutely no security in wiring money.
Yeah.
Yeah, so thank you for that advice. I really just wanted to reinforce it because I see it every week.
Yep.
It has not stopped, no matter how much we tell people, don't fall for this. Somebody comes in and says, my computer is hacked. And, and all we can do then is say, hey, take it to a professional.
Yep. Yep. There you go.
All
righty.
So thanks for what you got, for getting the word out, guys.
Sure. Thank you,
take
Joel.
Care.
And Joel helps run the local Tech Age Computer Learning Center at the JCC. So if you're interested in learning more about computers, that's a great place to go. In fact, I'm heading there after the show here for the Apple Cider Q&A meeting.
Oh, there you go.
Saturdays at the JCC. And it's just a great learning resource, especially for older people who didn't grow up with computers.
Mm-hmm.
I see stuff my son is doing that I didn't even think of doing. I didn't get into computers until high school.
Oh, okay.
And that's late.
Yeah.
They didn't have computers until I went to high school.
They didn't have them when I went to high school.
Yeah, and so now, you know, we're hearing, you know, high school kids. My son and I, we like to fly rockets now. And there was a NASA was doing a student launch initiative to help, you know, students learn about rocketry and aerodynamics and engineering and things like that. And there were some middle schools that had entered teams into this competition. You know, middle schools flying big rockets. You know, the little tiny Estes rockets we used to fly. You know, that's great. I'm building my new rocket. Memorial Day weekend is the Mars Club next big rocket launch. My rocket's hopefully I'm going to shoot for a mile. When I get, I got to get to level two to get a big enough motor. There's sort of the Mile High Club and there's the Mach Club. So if you can hit Mach 1 and you can hit a mile, you're a real rocketeer.
Now, where do you guys go for that?
The Mars Club meets and launches from the Geneseo Airport,
okay,
where the air show is every year.
Oh, all right.
So this year for Memorial Day weekend is the New York Power Show, and we have a 12,000-foot waiver. From the FAA because we're going high. We have a 12,000-foot waiver, some of the rockets will even push that. There's another club that meets in Penyan area out in Potter, the other side of Canandaigua. And we meet on farm. So around the airport is, you know, crops.
Yeah.
Fortunately, there's no crops growing yet because we've lost a few rockets in the crops.
Yeah, but you're going to be a little muddy out there.
Yeah, we're hoping the weather is going to dry up enough so that it won't be too muddy.
But I don't know about that one, my friend.
Yeah.
Well, all the farmers are complaining they can't even plant
right now.
Because they're so far behind.
Although we did hear that the line of rocket-eating trees has been taken down.
The rocket-eating trees?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they must be related to Charlie Brown's kite-eating trees. Yep.
Okay. But, yeah, no, that's... Yeah. Hopefully you'll have good weather in that for it, too.
Yeah, but so, computers have become so ingrained now. You know, toddlers are using iPads. Middle school kids are doing engineering challenges. It's just amazing.
Yep. All right, folks. You've wasted another 2 hours... And hopefully you've learned a little bit more than when you first tuned into this great show. But all three of us will be back next week, as Nick would say, in 166 hours. But stay tuned. George is up next with great German music as Michael tries to keep him in line. But, hey, there's no guarantees there, but he does his best. And we want to thank all the folks that took the time to pick up the phones and give us a call. We had a great variety of phone calls, and hopefully other folks learn from that too. And that's what the show is all about. And again, I'd love to thank all the folks that support the show year after year right here at Member Supported Jazz 90.1. And we will see you on the other side. Later.